Welcome to the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana.
Watford for the win! Yes! Yes! Unbelievable!
Your daily home for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Welcome to Indiana basketball.
Smart takes the shot! And the Hoosiers with 3 seconds. Go ahead.
Indiana wins the championship. Keith Smart is the hero.
When my time on earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my...
Now here's your host, Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana. What I feel is the pinnacle, the absolute pinnacle of all of college basketball.
And hello, welcome in. The start of a new week, and we'll be live with you each day this week here on the Hoosier Report. Complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective. So glad to have you with us. And don't forget, 11 a.m. each day live here on the Big X if you're listening in Southern Indiana. And for those that may be beyond, don't forget you can stream us online, BigXSportsRadio.com. Click the Listen Live button. You can also find us as a podcast each day on Apple Podcast and SoundCloud as well. So no matter how you're with us, as always, so glad you're along for the hour ride, and plenty to get to as we start the week. And we actually had some basketball over the weekend. It was pretty exciting if you took any time to watch the TBT, the basketball tournament. Pretty simple name for a $1 million winner-take-all prize. And there are some IU connections that are going to be playing Tuesday in that championship game with $1 million on the line. So we'll talk some about that. And, of course, the coronavirus threat continues. The number of cases is concerning as we seem to be seeing a flare, not just out west or in the south, but right here in the Midwest as well, with Indiana and Kentucky holding off on some announcements to move things forward as far as reopenings go. So that is affecting sports, and it could affect sports. And so we'll catch up on the latest with that here today. Also in the program, let's take a look at today's show lineup. It's a service of Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Segment one, we have our Zaxby's headlines summary of the day's top IU and Southern Indiana sports news. And we'll talk about the TBT. We'll talk about Maurice Creek's big shot yesterday to help his team to the TBT championship game on Tuesday. Also, we'll talk about IU Athletics, their recent update on COVID-19 cases. We'll tell you the new numbers they released over the weekend. A former Mr. Basketball and IU player has died. We'll catch up on that. That obviously is not good news. And then some coronavirus-related, updates from high school to college football and more. We'll cover that here in the first segment as well. Later in the program, Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star, he's with us. We always talk IU sports with Zach each Monday to kickstart the week here on the program, and we'll do so with Zach today. Then later in the show, Chad Gilbert, he's the athletic director at Charlestown. He's a former basketball coach here in the area. He's also president of the IHSA Executive Board, and he'll join us a little later as we talk some Southern Indiana sports. Local headlines, I know Chad will want to talk about the TBT over the weekend as well, as we're now set for the championship game on Tuesday. So we'll cover all of those things and more here in the show today. That's the show lineup, a service of Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Make sure you visit Honey Baked Ham in New Albany to check out all the new dinner package deals that are now being offered. You can dine in as well as pick up and curbside service. It's still available at Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Let's take a look at our Zaxby's headlines, a summary of the day's top IU and Southern Indiana sports news, with locations in Jeffersonville and New Albany open to serve you. Maurice Creek, former IU player, he would go on to finish his Division I college basketball career at George Washington after a couple of seasons wearing the cream and crimson in Bloomington. He had 10 points yesterday for the Sideline Cancer Team, which is playing in the basketball tournament in Columbus, Ohio. But most importantly, he hit a three-pointer at the end of the game, which reached the target score with the Elam ending of 67 points to lock in the victory for Sideline Cancer. Now, we know if you follow the TBT, they are very good. They were seeded high coming into the tournament. That's probably aided in their ability to advance through the bracket. But one thing about yesterday's game, they defeated Overseas Elite. And if you've watched any of the TBT games over the last number of years, the overseas team is a mix of overseas professionals, some others as well. The new addition, the big name this year, was Joe Johnson, former NBA player that signed up to play with Overseas Elite. They have been dominant. In fact, they won three TBT championships in a row, including one of those years, I believe it was up to a $2 million winner-take-all prize. So they were seeded number two. I think the Sideline Cancer Team was seeded up, you know, upper teens, maybe even in the low 20s, if I remember correctly. So a big upset, but Sideline Cancer playing well. Maurice Creeks had a great tournament. The big shot to hit the target score and win it and eliminate one of the favorites that still remain in the TBT. Also on that team, Remy Abel. He had 14 points and 5 rebounds in the semifinal game yesterday. And now that sets up a $1 million winner-take-all prize on Tuesday. It'll be the Sideline Cancer Team against the Golden Eagles, which is basically a Marquette alumni team. It's not a completely Marquette team, I don't believe, but it's basically a Marquette alumni team, and they've been very good in the tournament now this year and the last couple of years. They've never won it, so there will be a new champion this year. Should be a great game. I think Sideline Cancer, that team has what it takes to win the whole tournament. So it's likely that Remy Abel and Mo Creek, they're going to be leaving Columbus, Ohio with some big bucks in their pockets if they can score one more victory on Tuesday in the championship game. Also, as we look ahead in other headlines today, the university up in Bloomington announced a new update on COVID-19 tests that have been administered. We previously had an update that said zero positives out of 183 or so tests. That came earlier in June. As of this weekend, from June 24th through July 8th, that's a period where you saw maybe the second phase of football, or I should say the second phase of basketball, and maybe the third phase of football for those that had not returned previously. There were 112 more tests, and of those tests, there were four positives out of that 112 additional tests. So a total of 295 tests have been taken, a negative test have been taken thus far, again, split into two phases. I don't know if there'll be a third announcement on additional tests or not. These include student athletes, coaches, and staff, a total of everybody that's returned so far. This is a really good total, four positive COVID-19 cases. I'm sure if it's student athletes, many of them were asymptomatic, had no idea they had it, probably had no signs, showing no temperature, anything that would alert you that maybe you did have something wrong with you health-wise. So as we see other schools coming back and have had to shut down voluntary workouts, had to cancel things, had to report bigger cases, more positives in the Big Ten, I think Iowa has been maybe the leader as far as the negative side of COVID with a lot of positive cases. Good news continues there for Indiana with just four positive cases. Also, one other note before we get into some additional COVID stuff. Former IU player, 1979 Mr. Basketball, Steve Buscey, passed away over the weekend at just 59 years old. He had suffered a heart attack over the 4th of July weekend and succumbed to the illness and his issues over the weekend. Again, played at Washington, was a Hatchet. Of course, that's a legendary program with a terrific gymnasium in our state. Went on to be a member of Indiana's 1981 National Championship team and passed away over the weekend. Couple COVID-related things. This one is interesting. This is about a high school. Over the last week, we've heard a few high schools, one in South Bend, one in the Indianapolis area, and maybe one other that have had positive COVID cases that have shut down their workouts. I've heard rumors of some positive cases with high school stuff locally, but nothing to report. No announcements have been made or confirmations made by any of the local schools. But here's one that kind of surprised me when I saw this story in the Indianapolis Star earlier today. Washington Township Schools in Indianapolis, after saying that they would open as scheduled later in July, have now decided to start the year with a virtual learning only. There's going to be no in-person classes at Washington Township Schools. Now, who is Washington Township Schools? It's a lot of schools, a number of elementary schools, three middle schools, a couple other, a career center and developmental preschool, but mainly you'll recognize Washington Township Schools as Indianapolis North Central. We know that they are always, it seems, a power in multiple sports, a big school, and if the school is not in session, athletics are on hold as well, they announce with this decision. So is this something that we see more of? What about North Central when it comes to football and who they're supposed to play this season? If the football season happens and they're not in school, will they be allowed to play? We know that athletics are off until further notice at Washington Township Schools. Will we see this with other high schools and school corporations and systems in the state of Indiana? I think this is one to watch because, you know, really, you think about school, it's not mid-August or early September. A lot of schools start the last couple days of July or the first week of August. And so if you're going to make an announcement, whether it comes from the governor, which would probably be for all schools, I think some people wondering if that's not going to happen at some point, that no, we're not going to open in person, or if it's left up to individual school districts as it stands now, if you're planning to not go back to school for in-person instruction, you almost have to make an announcement here in the next week and a half or so to allow parents the opportunity to get things adjusted for childcare and potentially a change in work schedules and so many other things that goes along with that. But, of course, from an athletic perspective, everything on hold at North Central High School in Indianapolis. This is one to follow. Will other schools in the Indy area take the lead or follow the lead that the MSD Washington Township has taken? Or will they be an outlier and not go to school when the rest of the state basically does? I've got to believe you're going to see more schools that put athletics on hold and that put in-person classes on hold and at least start the year with virtual instruction. We'll see if anybody locally pulls the trigger for that, but that's my guess. You see more, way more than just Washington Township Schools in Indianapolis go that route. A couple other COVID things related to sports. Maryland football, they have halted their voluntary workouts. 9 positive tests across a number of different athletic teams in the Maryland athletic program. So there's a Big Ten team that's halting their workouts in football right now. Also, this is interesting. The NJCAA, that's the National Junior College Athletic Association. I think they're supposed to vote on this to make it official today. But the rumor is, the plan that's leaked out is that they are going to move junior college football for this upcoming season to the spring of 2021. And not only does that obviously affect a lot of teams and a lot of junior college programs, but it could affect the recruiting calendar as well, because a lot of junior college offers don't go out until after their season in the fall into the early part of the winter have concluded. That really could put teams, and Indiana occasionally will go this route, that rely on junior college football prospects in a bit of a bind. With that as well, it's going to adjust other sports seasons. Junior college basketball, it's big stuff. A lot of good players come from there. Practice won't be allowed to start if this plan passes until January 11th. Competition in junior college basketball would be allowed to begin on January 22nd. Teams would be able to play a maximum of 22 games, which is a little less than what a normal JUCO season looked like. All regular season region district championships have to be completed by April 10th, and the national championship tournament, where they bring all the top JUCO teams together out in Kansas, would begin on April 19th of next year. So that's a big change in the hoops calendar and a really big change in the JUCO football calendar if this passes and JUCO football is played in the spring. I think it's a 7 or 8 game schedule is being reported what the plan could look like. We should find out on this later today. And really, you know, junior college, there's really not a junior college close to us that we follow or cover. Indiana has basketball and football went the junior college routes, especially under Tom Crean, and the football program some as well. But the real reason I mention it is because this is another governing body that has a lot of different schools spread out across the country. I think the NJCAA governs everybody but junior colleges in California, if they're a member of that institution, if I remember correctly. Another governing body making a big decision, getting ahead of this thing and moving things to the spring for fall and bumping back the basketball season, making some tough decisions. You have to wonder, again, like I mentioned with the high school closing, or I should say starting with in-person or not in-person education and going the virtual route there at North Central, you have to wonder if we'll see more governing bodies, more conferences, more state high school associations like New Mexico did last week, announced that they are going to make changes in how their calendars look, from sports seasons in the fall being moved later into the year, which creates an overlap of sports. There are so many things with all this to think about and to see how it works out. But I think we're going to have a lot of additional announcements like this that are going to be head scratchers, that are going to make you wonder how all this is going to work. And who knows, even if things are delayed to the spring, are we able to play safely at that point? And does this stuff that's moved to the spring already, a couple conferences like the Ivy League and JUCO football, does it even happen then? It is going to be interesting to see. That's a look at our headlines for this Monday edition of the program. Our headlines brought to you each day by Zaxby's, with locations in Jeffersonville and New Albany. We'll head to a commercial break. We'll come back with Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star, the latest on IU basketball and football. And, of course, we'll talk about the positive cases, just 4 so far on the Bloomington campus, when it comes to athletes and coaches that are returning. Coming up next, this is the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison. Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
I'll handle this the way I want to handle it now that I'm here. You f***ed it up to begin with. Now just sit there or leave. I don't give a f*** what you do. Now, back to the game.
Here's Matt Dennison.
And we're back on this Monday edition of the program. A couple additional headlines I want to squeeze in really quick, but the News and Tribune is confirming some rumors that had been circulating, but a Silver Creek football player has tested positive for COVID-19, according to Coach Pappenhaus, the second-year football coach at Silver Creek, and also the Patriot League, which is a mid-major league in Division I. They released a statement just minutes ago that says they will not engage in competition in the fall season, both championship and non-championship events, which includes all of their fall sports. So a couple interesting things, one local, one on the college level, and I want to bring in, on that note, Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star. And Zach, I tell you what, as you cover Indiana, as we take a look at the Hoosiers and talk sports here locally in Southern Indiana each day, I think we're just going to have to get used to these sort of announcements that a school, whether it be a college or high school, has an athlete that is positive for COVID-19, that as seasons begin, we hope maybe games are moved or canceled because of COVID-19, maybe an outbreak within a team or within a community. And, of course, with conferences like the Patriot League announcing that they won't participate in fall sports this year and will make a decision on winter sports forthcoming, I think that's going to be something we see more of as we move into the fall as well.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I think this is just where we are now. I've talked to some people, both sort of in an official capacity in sports and also people who just, I know, who work in public health in different sectors who basically have said, and I don't mean to, I think sometimes it, I get a little fired up talking about this, but listen, it's my livelihood. And I want there to be sports to cover because that's what I enjoy. That's what I'm passionate about. That's what I'm paid to do. And smart people I know have basically said that there's a decent chance we missed the window to really get this right because of the way that we have struggled to kind of collectively come together in the day-to-day behaviors that fight the spread of this thing. And I think you are going to see more rollbacks, pushbacks, reschedulings. Obviously, you know, I imagine you and I are probably going to talk about the Big Ten's decision a little bit today. And, you know, it's unfortunate, but that's, you know, it's where we are now. And I think that, you know, I do get a little bit sort of wary when I see people say, you know, oh, these are, you know, the dominoes are beginning to fall with the Ivy League, the Patriot League. That there are, it's really important to note, different sets of decisions or different sets of factors going into the decisions to be made about, let's say, Big Ten football versus Ivy League football. But it is a reminder that we really are in the teeth of this thing, and it is going to have a profound effect on how our fall plays out from a sports perspective, probably from a school's perspective. And in some cases, I think those things are probably going to go kind of hand in hand.
Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star. We saw late last week over the weekend, IU making an announcement that there have been 4 positive tests in the second wave of COVID-19 testing. When you compare the total number of tests and only 4 positive cases, of course, there were 0 when they made the initial announcement for that first wave of student athletes and coaches that returned to campus. And you compare it to others in the Big Ten, that's a pretty good number, pretty low number.
Yeah, I mean, again, you're absolutely right in terms of percentages. And I think the other thing you're sort of looking for is basically as those numbers come out, do you see spikes as athletes are able to ramp up activity? You know, that's probably more what you're worried about from a sort of, you know, an on schedule standpoint, so to speak, is whether or not athletes are able to come back, you know, get tested. If they're positive, they can quarantine until they're over the disease and then begin activity. If they're negative, they can start activity. Can you keep numbers down, or do you have a breakout in your team the way we saw, for example, at Clemson? And there have been a couple other schools too. I think UNC shut workouts down after a number of positive tests, and Louisville basketball obviously did recently as well. You know, it's as much about whether those numbers shoot up as you kind of continue on through testing, rather than maybe necessarily when you're in the intake process as athletes return to campus if they're testing positive. Because I think there is an argument to be made, a convincing one and a fair one, that at least for the moment, you know, this is about as safe as any place you can put a lot of these athletes, you know, in the sense that being in a small town with the student body still, you know, largely out of town, you're not in in-person classes. Obviously, IU has the resources to be very, very vigilant about, you know, sterilization and testing and tracing and daily health checks. They have their own in-house, you know, sort of medical framework. You know, as many athletics departments do. And so at least for the moment, this is probably about as safe as you can kind of make the environment for a lot of athletes. But it's just going to be a question of how things progress through the summer. And then certainly what things look like as you bring students back in the fall.
Zach Osterman with the Indianapolis Star is my guest. Zach, I know that the information as far as what's happening with workouts has been few and far between. We had Matt Weaver on of Pigs last week, and he had gathered a couple maybe tidbits about the football team and what they had been up to. But from a basketball perspective, I've yet to hear much or know much. Any idea from a basketball perspective that the coaches are actually able to work with the players, not just strength and conditioning staff like Cliff Marshall, but can they actually pick up a basketball? Can they actually get in the gym and shoot around? Are they able to be around their coaches yet, like Archie Miller and staff?
Yeah, they can get it in the gym. The rules are basically no more than 7 people in the Cook Hall weight room at any one time, no more than 10 people on either of the courts. And I believe when it says 10 people on the court, I believe they basically mean 10 on the north side, which is the men's side, 10 on the south side, which is the women's side. I don't think it's 10 people total across the two courts, because if you've been in Cook Hall, you know, there's a big dividing wall between the two. They are in effect, you know, separate facilities in their own way. I do not believe coaches can work with them yet. I think that's coming very soon, but these are still considered voluntary workouts. And so I think a lot of what's being done right now is more in line with the, you know, kind of the strength and conditioning portion of the summer, the open gym portion of the summer, things like that. And it's also worth pointing out, you know, I think the basketball team is just now bringing all of its athletes together for the first time, because they brought them, men's basketball brought them back in a couple of waves. Women's basketball brought everybody save Alexa Goulbe, who's going to be staying the summer in Latvia, where she's from, back at once. Men's basketball brought, I don't know the exact numbers, but it was basically, my understanding was half and half. Half came back when they were first allowed, and the second half just came back. I think Christian Lander, for example, reported just last week. So I think there's still much more in kind of the strength and conditioning portion of summer, but I believe the NCAA voted to basically launch a sort of off-season calendar with regard to basketball near the end of this month, and I think that's when you'll be able to see them. You'll see them, excuse me, be able to step up, you know, sort of their involvement from a coaching perspective.
Talking with Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star. He's with us Mondays as we talk IU football, IU basketball as well. I guess if you're Archie Miller and you're a member of his coaching staff, obviously you want to be around your players, your athletes as much as you possibly can, and do whatever the law of the NCAA, the Big Ten Conference, will allow you to do at this point. But I guess this the last number of months, and even continuing now into the summer, this has been a big time to maybe have an opportunity to develop recruiting relationships, whether it's the player itself, parents of recruits, of potential targets, high school coaches, AAU grassroots coaches. There should be no excuse for high major coaches to not do every trick in the bag as far as making contact and getting to know an athlete and those that are very important around him before they make their decision. I have to believe that recruiting is taking up a huge part of Archie Miller and his staff's time during this slower period.
Well, and you're having to be more creative too. I think that's probably something else we're going to find coming out of this is who's been able to be creative about how they're, you know, how they're selling their school, especially with kids who maybe haven't had the opportunity to visit yet and probably would have at some point, you know, in maybe the May, June window where you see athletes come through for some unofficials, or even maybe not having visited yet, but certainly be thinking about scheduling out some visits after what would have been the July AAU period that we'd be in the middle of right now under normal circumstances. You know, I think you're probably seeing this a little bit more with football, just because football is more of a quantity game. It's more of a numbers game. But, you know, you're seeing guys commit who've not visited the campus, but they'll say that they've at least done virtual tours. They've had coaches sort of take them around virtually and show them different things. And that's helped them build a level of comfort with the environment. And it's unfortunate that this is the case. It's unfortunate that this is kind of what, you know, what these athletes are having to go through in the way that this process is unfolding for them. But again, I think we're going to find out kind of on the other side of this, whatever that looks like, who's been creative about how they go through the recruiting process beyond, you know, the usual staples of, you know, a text or a DM or a call every day, FaceTime, just to see how things are going, just to stay in touch and that sort of thing. Who's been creative about maybe pitching their program when they're not able to do it in person?
Zach Osterman, the Indianapolis Star. Zach, I go to Twitter for a question. Ask Zach about Mo Creek and Remy Abel, why exactly they left the IU program. Off the top of my head, obviously I know they left. I think each of them played 2 years in Indiana under Tom Crean. Remy went to Xavier, and Mo Creek went to George Washington, if my memory serves correctly. But any remembrance of why those guys chose to leave the program?
Remy Abel's a little fuzzier for me, because he was a player that at the time, you know, he had a really solid first two seasons in Bloomington. He'd been kind of a reliable backup ball handler, certainly a reliable three-point shooter. And I think that there was a presumption that he was going to be stepping into pretty big minutes in that 2013-14 season, but then he decided to transfer to Xavier. Mo Creek, I think, was really just looking for a place where he'd have a bit of a bigger role. And, you know, I don't know if maybe if you know, you could get him in a candid moment. He'd also say that the injuries had kind of worn things down for him. But he winds up going to George Washington, and if I recall correctly, averaging about 15 points a game, rediscovered his three-point shooting, his penchant for three-point shooting that obviously the injuries had kind of taken away from him a little bit toward the back end of his Indiana career. Yeah, George Washington, he averages 14.1 points per game and shoots 40% from behind three-point line. You know, with Creek, it just sort of felt like it never really took off for him at Indiana. He obviously had that brilliant game against Kentucky where he scored 31 points at Assembly Hall. He had a couple other really good games that season, you know, over 12 games. I'm now looking at his stats. He averaged almost 16 and a half points. You know, he was hitting more than five, or he was attempting more than five threes a game, shooting almost 45% from behind the three-point line. I mean, he looked for all the world like, you know, sort of the next big scoring guard at Indiana. And then he has, you know, a series of knee injuries. I think first his kneecap was a problem. And then he also had an Achilles tear that caused him to miss all of the 2011-12 season. And then he comes back in 2013, the year Indiana wins a Big Ten title, and he appears in 24 games, but just never really seemed to find a way to kind of carve out a role that season. And I think as much as anything, George Washington was a bit of a fresh start for him. I know he also had a young family, if I recall correctly, at that time, and he wanted to be closer to them as well. So Abel, I don't remember quite as much of. I remember being surprised, and I remember it breaking under very strange circumstances. Indiana sending out a press release at like 11 o'clock on a Friday night, announcing that he was planning to transfer. It was very unusual. But with Mo Creek, I think it was just a confluence of a number of factors that wound up taking him obviously much closer to home at GW.
Zach Osterman with the Indianapolis Star. Zach, one more question before we let you go. Obviously, so much is up in the air right now with the upcoming college football season. What do you hear? What do you know about a Big Ten-only schedule? We talked some about this last week. I would assume that the schedule will have to be reworked because, you know, Indiana would have, what, two, 3 weeks off, or I guess two weekends off with no games, with losing non-conference opponents. But will the schedule be reworked, and do you think there's a chance that there is an additional game or so added across the Big Ten Conference if this all gets off the ground?
Yeah, my understanding is that the plan is to add one, to take it to a 10 game schedule. Obviously they're already at 9 now. I'm not sure, and I was on vacation last week. I kind of came off vacation to write about the Big Ten's decision, which had been building for a few days. I mean, I would even go so far as to say people around IU athletics had basically expected that to be the decision even before I think it was officially confirmed to be the Big Ten's intention, kind of in the days leading up to Thursday's announcement. It's not totally clear to me whether the 10-game schedule will basically just be everyone's 9-game schedule with a 10th game added. That would seem to be the most, you know, sensible and straightforward thing to me. But I also understand that scheduling can be a bit layered, and that, you know, you're basically looking for schools and teams that somehow can kind of line up bye weeks or off weeks or, you know, those different sorts of things. It's not always as simple as just plugging in an extra opponent for everyone. But I think that, you know, this is what I wrote on Thursday afternoon, and I still believe it. I know that people see this as a self-interested decision by the big conferences, and frankly, it is at one level. And I know that I completely understand the degree to which this puts the screws to smaller schools, you know, the Ball States of the world, the MAC schools, the Sun Belt schools, you know, the Mountain West schools, whomever, who really need those guarantee games for athletics department budgets that are already really hurting. But by the same token, I think the big conferences would also be justified in saying, you know, if we don't, this is our best route to a football season, because if the Big Ten, and I know the Pac-12 has followed suit, I think some other conferences are planning to as well, or at least examining the possibility. If you take this route, then you're able to establish, then you are able to control everything a lot more. You're able to say, we're only playing conference games, so we only have to worry about the states and the cities in our conference footprint. We can be in much more direct contact with local public health officials, you know, local medical officials. The Big Ten already has basically its own sort of COVID-19 medical advisory committee, so it can hand down protocols about testing, about tracing, about quarantining. What happens, you know, what's the cutoff, for example, for a certain number of positive tests before a team isn't allowed to compete? How do you handle that process if suddenly a team maybe has to, you know, be quarantined for a week or 2 weeks or whatever it is? It's still not ideal. It's still imperfect. It still, frankly, may not work. In fact, I would say I think there's still a good chance it won't work. But it's the best. It gives these conferences a much better chance at playing out their football seasons in particular, but certainly to some degree, just their fall sports seasons overall. And I think for every small conference that says, you know, this decision really sticks it to the little guy, I think the big conferences would be right in saying, you know, quite frankly, that if we go under two, if we go under at the top end of the sport, is there going to be anything left for you? Now, there are myriad short and long-term complications for this. I mean, for example, if you told me that this led to an even more substantial breakaway of the Power Five from the rest of college athletics, I would believe that wholeheartedly. I would have no trouble believing that. If you told me this led to basically conferences deciding to play conference-only schedules moving forward, especially in the bigger sports, particularly football, I wouldn't have a ton of trouble believing that. But this is, you know, I near the beginning of this, I wrote that story that basically just said, this is going to change the landscape of sports as we know it in ways that we can't comprehend yet. And that was an incredibly open-ended thing to say, but this is the sort of thing that happens where 10 years from now, you know, the Big Ten is 16 teams, including Notre Dame, and it's broken into 14 pods, and they only play conference opponents, and they play a 12-game schedule, and then they basically have their own little 14 playoff, and then the winner of the 14 playoff goes on to play in a college football playoff. And, you know, my son looks forward to the Big Ten playoff every year, and I don't even know how to explain to him that there was a time when none of this was even possible, when none of this was even conceivable. That's what we're in the middle of right now, and it's changing all sorts of things about day-to-day life, and sports is going to be no different. So I know it's a long-winded answer, but believe me, we could go even longer than that. The reality is this is the conferences trying to figure out the best way forward for them for now. And the other thing I'd say too is it makes it easier for the conferences if they need to delay or even move their seasons. It's a lot easier for the Big Ten to move a conference-only 10-game Big Ten football season to the spring than it is for the Big Ten to move its normal schedule to the spring and then try to work with every single non-conference opponent, or even have its schools, its individual departments, work with every single non-conference opponent to try and figure out how to get, you know, all those games to the spring as well. And then you think about the cascade effect down all the sports to volleyball, soccer, cross-country golf, whatever. This just makes everything easier. It doesn't mean it's easy. It just means it's easier.
Zach Osterman, the Indianapolis Star, and you're exactly right. I think right now we're all looking at sports and COVID-19, but this will have effects, maybe some very positive, years from now on the landscape of sports and how things are done. Zach, as always, thanks for the chat. Good stuff. Look forward to it each week, and we'll do it again next Monday.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, as always.
Zach Osterman with the Indianapolis Star as we talk IU and college sports. We'll head to a commercial break, come back and talk a little basketball and some local headlines with Chad Gilbert. He's the athletic director at Charlestown and, of course, the president of the IHSA Executive Board. All coming your way next on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
Let's win this one for all the small schools who never had a chance to get here.
Join Matt Daly at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Let's win for Coach, who got us here.
Here's Matt Dennison.
And we're back. Final segment here on this Monday program. Chad Gilbert is with me. Chad is the athletic director at Charlestown High School, former basketball coach in the area, and currently president of the IHSAA Executive Board. And, Chad, we got to start today with a local note. Coach Pappenhouse of Silver Creek Football going to the team's Facebook page to make an announcement that one of his players has tested positive for COVID-19, and of course that player, whoever it is, we wish quick recovery, and we hope that this is something that doesn't spread through the Silver Creek program. They're taking practice off today. Those that were in the same group or quadrant as this positive player have been notified and will have to quarantine or test negative before they can return, but the Dragons do plan to get back to football tomorrow in Sellersburg. Chad, as an AD, this is just something that you've got to be prepared for, and you got to know at some point, whether it's now in the summer or whether it's once the fall sports season begins, it's just going to be likely that not only athletes but students test positive for COVID-19.
Matt, before we go to COVID, I do have a couple of personal things I want to say. First, starting out on a somber note, you know, one thing, when you're around people your whole life, we've got these people in our life. You have them in yours. You know, people that make a difference. One thing I do want to say on a personal note is my dad's best friend, my guy I've grown up with, Kevin Llewellyn, his dad, Irvin Llewellyn, passed away suddenly yesterday. And Irvin was the type of guy that when I was in the layup line at Floyd Central, what he told me set the tone for the rest of my life as a basketball player. The advice that he gave me in that line, that's something we can't share on the air. But what he told me there is that's something that gave me that cockiness, that edge that I took with me the rest of my life. And so those people out there, those kids are out there now doing those things. I know you've got that someone in your life who's made that difference, said that thing. Make sure you hug those people and love those people. Second thing, Matt, positive notes. One, Amy and I, 8th anniversary tomorrow. Hard to believe, 8 years.
Where's the dinner at, or I should say, where's the take-home dinner? I know you're not going out.
You hit that one on the nail. You hit that nail on the head, Matt. That is yet to be decided, to be determined, so we'll talk about that in just a little bit. It was so good. Saturday, we had a tree go down. It's still on our power lines out front right now. I was looking out there for it. We were splitting some Chewy's queso for lunch today. I came back in. I got all the crumbs. She took all the chips. So happy anniversary to me. The last thing, Matt, is my niece, Grace Eigerhart, is Miss Scott County, so I'm excited for her on that. So a lot of good things going on, a lot of blessings in the Gilbert family. And one of those blessings is being on air with you. Talking about Coach Pat. Oh, last thing. Let's call this segment Houdini, 5 minutes of funk. If we get 5 minutes, we can get funky here. Let's have some background music coming in with that Houdini in the background, you know. And
Chad, I think Chad, let me stop you. I think this says it best. You've been quarantined way too long.
You're right. It's time to leave the house. You're right. But to answer your question, that's something that's going to happen, Matt. It's something that Coach Pappenhouse, Coach Dablo are both responsible administrators, responsible coaches. Coach Pappenhouse, we taught at Jeff together. We taught at Charlestown together. Those guys are going to put our students' safety first, just like every other AD, every other administrator, and every other coach throughout the state. Are there going to be cases? Absolutely. Are we going to work through them the best we can? 100% sure. What will this do to fall sports? That's anybody's guess. What will this do to school? That's anybody's guess. The determining factor is, we just got to do our best as a society to come together and try to beat this thing. It's no fun. There's not a teacher in the world. You know, if you ask a teacher last year at this time, I don't want to go back to school. There's not a teacher in the world who's not ready to go back to school. There's not a kid who's not ready to go back to school. This is something that needs to happen. It's something that we have to work together in order to happen.
Chad Gilbert.
Matt, one thing I do want to add on that is, you know, and you can see that the kids, the parents need that. And we talked about that on travel ball tournaments and stuff. You can see that kids are out there doing that and doing their thing. And you see the enjoyment on their face. You see the enjoyment on the parents' face. And that's something that I think it's good. And that thing, you know, you'll see lots of tweets last week, the first weekend. Good to be back in the gym. Good to be with my guys. And I appreciate all that. But I'm sure, you know, in a week or two or in a month, when Bobby's dad comes in, wants to know why Bobby's not being the quarterback, or Sally's mom wants to know why Sally's splitting time on the JV and the varsity and the volleyball team, that they're going to be happy. They're going to wish they weren't in the gym with their guys. You know, but I get it. But, you know, on those things, let's talk about being a player, Matt, what it takes to be a player. You know, you have to when we did our things with coaching, we practiced 2.5 hours. It'd be the best practice ever. And I tell the kids, you know, this is what every good team in the state's doing. What are you doing as an individual? That's the one thing I want to ask players and parents, you know, when they're doing their travel ball. What are they doing today? Are they taking some cuts? Are they shooting baskets on their own? Are they in the weight room? Because every good team does that. It's what you do individually. You know, being in the gym, just going to the gym, that doesn't make you more of a player than standing in the kitchen makes you a master chef. You've got to go in that gym with a plan, with something to do. And champions, you know, they're not who they are because they win. Champions win because of who they are. And that's something that, you know, in the summer, maybe these people can reinvent that moving forward. And, you know, the last thing I'll hit you with on this, Matt, is, you know, again, it's ring season. I saw the rings. Is that something that the end of ring season, is there a banquet or a parent prom or something like that they all get together and celebrate with their rings?
Chad, I got to squeeze this in. We've got about a minute left. I wanted to let you get all your quarantine items out of the way. Real quick, TBT, it's been terrific. We've talked about it from the very beginning. We were just glad there was some live sports back. There have been some awesome finishes, and now we've got a terrific championship game set.
Oh, it's going to be outstanding. And kudos to those guys for the job they do every year, and this year in particular, because there's a lot of hurdles they had to overcome, a lot of obstacles that they came over. And it's going to be an outstanding game. The Elam ending, Dennison and Gilbert, let's get the league going.
I love it. Chad Gilbert, he's the athletic director at Charlestown High School. Happy anniversary to Chad and Amy. That wraps things up for this Monday program. Back with you tomorrow. This is the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.